Our thanks go to Hartbury University and College, Harper Adams University, NFU Mutual, Thring Solicitors, DataTag, and Nugent Engineering for supporting Series 2 of Keeping on Track. Hi, I'm Adam Henson. Welcome to the second series of Keeping on Track, a podcast series made by the farming community for the farming community. Okay, here's a fact for you. Farming accounts for 1% of the working population in Great Britain, but 16% of all workplace deaths. The latest figures show that 21 farm workers and 6 members of the public, including a child, lost their lives over the past year. That's pretty shocking. And it's what we're talking about today.
Thank you, Adam. I'm Dominic Arkwright. Today, farm safety. And we'll start by hearing the story of James Bannister, a farm contractor who now runs JLR Farm Services, a spraying and muck spreading business. Be warned, it's a harrowing, cautionary tale.
August 6, 1998. Normal day, go to work, see everybody first thing in the morning in the yard, then go to the harvester, check my potato harvester over, ready to go lifting potatoes. Usual day, you know, have a chat in the yard, then get to the field, carry on lifting the potatoes. About 9:30, 10 o'clock time, we'd finished one field potatoes, and we were then going to move on to another field where different variety, and we're going from reds to whites or whites to reds, I can't just remember now. So obviously we'd cleaned the harvester out. The harvester was just ticking over, emptying itself out into the trailer. I was stood between the potato harvester and the trailer talking to the trailer man. Then the next thing I remember is actually fighting the potato harvester. I've no recollection of actually climbing onto the machine, but I can remember fighting it when it was pulling me inside. And my trailer man, I remember him telling me he heard the screams and he ran to switch the machine off. By the time he'd got the machine turned off, I was actually in the machine up to my shoulder. I think another 10 seconds, it might have been a fatality rather than just a traumatic injury. I don't know. But anyway, he got the machine switched off. He came running up to the side of the machine to me. Well, I'm assuming he came running to me, saying, "What can he do?" And my exact words were, "Get the big bar out of the toolbox, take the power shaft off and wind the bloody machine backwards to wind me out." And it wasn't as simple as that, because I'd actually followed what they call the cue drive with my arm. So my arm hadn't just gone straight through two rollers. It had got hooked into the web and it'd gone through a roller, gone down, round and back up and starting over the top of another roller by the time he got it stopped. The thing I remember most, and it's the most frightening thing when you think about it, is when he released the pressure by taking the shaft off and trying to turn the machine backwards. He released the pressure on my shoulder and it was literally like tipping a jug of water from 4 foot in the air. The sound that my blood made when it hit the ground was like pouring water. And then it just stopped, thankfully. The body shut down. So then it was a case of, what do I do now? So I said to him, obviously, you're going to have to get them out to me, get the emergency services here. Fire brigade, ambulance, police were all there. And also Lynx and Notts Air Ambulance arrived. I was actually inside the machine, conscious and aware of what was going on for, oh, I think a good 2.5 hours I was stuck inside the machine. So I was drugged up with whatever as well by this stage. I remember telling them to get the spanners out of my toolbox, 2 13mm spanners at either side, and take the bar off the top so it actually opens the gap up bigger to get me lifted out. I do know that I found out at a later date there was a surgeon in the field waiting to operate and take my arm off in the field. Thankfully, he didn't have to do that. I did have my arm when they got me out of the machine. They then carried me across to the helicopter, you're just going to bear with me a little bit on this, because it is very difficult to talk about at times. I had to hold my left arm, because every time they let go of my hand that they were holding to hold my hand and arm on my body, it just used to flop off the side. And they couldn't get me into the helicopter with it doing that, so I actually had to hold my hand. I knew that it was gone. I know what the machines do and what they can do, and I've seen what they do to lumps of wood that have gone through the machine, as opposed to an arm. I was aware that I would lose my arm. They got me into the helicopter. I looked at my hand. I can still feel my hand and my arm now as you and I are talking. And yes, it didn't look very pretty, and I only saw the hand. I didn't see the rest of it as such, but basically, my upper arm was what the class has degloved. So basically, it stripped all the skin and muscle back to the bone on the upper arm, and had also pulled some nerves out of my shoulder. I don't have any feeling in my shoulder as such anymore. So basically, they got me to hospital in 9 minutes, and they got me into A&E or whatever, Sheffield Northern General, where I went, and the surgeon that came to me, obviously looking at it and seeing what I could do, I signed my own consent form to amputate my arm. I then went into theatre and spent 5 hours in theatre. I came round late on the Thursday evening. I was transferred to a ward. I had the Friday, I suppose, to recover a little bit, and then I went in for another 5-hour operation on the Saturday morning. And then the following Friday, the surgeon came and looked at me and said I could go home. I was in hospital for a total of 10 days through a traumatic accident, which could have been avoided.
The terrible story of James Bannister. And here's how it could have been avoided.
Truthfully, I'll say I was blasé to safety. But the safety protocol on our farm wasn't a very good safety protocol. I won't say hit and miss, but there were certain things that you think back and you look back and you think, well, you shouldn't have been doing that.
So now James is committed to keeping other people safe.
That's all that it needs. It's one person to realise that what happened to me could happen to them. That's the reason why I'm quite happy putting my story out there. And the biggest thing that comes back to me from different people is the visual impact of seeing me. Because they think it can't happen to me. And they've seen pictures, they've seen videos, they've had these educational days. But none of it matches to me walking in front of them. And they actually get the visual impact of me without an arm.
James Bannister. So we know that farming is a dangerous occupation. Fatalities and serious accidents are frighteningly common.
Health and safety, physical safety, is atrocious. Let's be really clear.
Stuart Roberts, Hertfordshire farmer and recent deputy president of the NFU.
The statistic I always used to use was every 9 days somebody gets killed in the farming industry. I think actually I haven't redone the figures for a little while. I suspect at the moment they may even look worse than that. And definitely if we look at comparable sectors of the economy, we are much worse.
Farming accounts for around 40% of workplace fatalities, the highest of any industry. So the question is, why? Here's Becca Wilson, fifth generation farmer and podcaster.
The health and safety procedures in place are nothing really compared to another business or another place of employment. And one of the reasons I think for that is often the employees here are all family. So the structure isn't as formal as other companies.
The real problem here is the things that are killing people on farm. And actually, let's also look at the things that are causing really serious injury, because then you get into some very, very big numbers. But the things that are killing people on farm are exactly the same things that were killing them 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago. They are not new things. So these are not new risks. And they are falling from height. They are being run over by machinery. They are the risks associated with slurry tanks and gases. They are around PTO shafts. And every single one of those is preventable.
And the changing landscape of the farming industry doesn't help, according to Stephanie Barclay of the Farm Safety Foundation.
They are being stretched. They're under pressures in terms of weather. They're under pressures in terms of financial impact. You know, the rumblings from Brexit are still going on. What's happening in Ukraine is affecting them. But also that added thing of larger, bigger equipment. By the way, equipment that's there to thrash, it's there to cut, it's there to bale. And that includes you as well as the crops. But also you're dealing with animals. Animals, especially livestock, you know, are unpredictable. You know, they can change. And no matter how much you know that animal, you may have reared it from birth, you know, that will turn on you. And unfortunately, it does happen.
And Warwickshire farmer James Keller knows this only too well.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary. I see statistics all the time coming through about people getting damaged or hurt by bulls or even rams. I had a friend of mine who got killed by a ram just by worming. He was leant over, he got rammed by a ram and split his head open. That was it, dead. You know, it's as easy as that. And, you know, people look at me when I tell the story and they're all bemused, like, how did that happen? Well, it does happen. It's the most dangerous sector in the world, probably.
And it's one of those things that appears in the top three every single year. Livestock, workplace transport, machinery and falls. They're the four key reasons that farmers and farm workers lose their lives every single year. And we need to basically stop. We need to stop losing these fantastic people, you know, and we need to get them to value themselves a bit more and value their own safety because it's a business. So they should treat their farm like any other business, and any other business would do a health and safety policy and create that and share it. I don't know why farmers don't feel that that's absolutely necessary.
So livestock, transport, machinery and falls, the main causes of injury and fatal accidents. But what is it that makes these things risky? Stuart Roberts and Becca Wilson will get us started.
Some of the reasons that we do the things we do is because we're short of time, we're short of money. Let's be really clear, the economics of this are horrendous. That's why we can't afford a new man cage. We can't afford to bring in an expert with all the safety equipment to fix the roof, so we'll do it ourselves. But what I know for sure is we can't afford to kill ourselves.
I think ultimately farmers are pushed for time and on the whole quite pushed financially. So the cost, for example, of buying a basket to go on your telehandler to make those jobs up in the air safe. Well, is it worth it? Because I'll only use it a couple of times a year to clean out a gutter. Oh, well, I can't afford that. So I'll just do something when I need to. And I think the costs associated sometimes with being as safe as we can be are prohibitive, and it shouldn't be like that. And ultimately, it's an attitude thing, though. If you have to sacrifice something else to afford that health and safety equipment, then we should be sacrificing that other thing. I think we may be quite good at making excuses in farming to not actually implement all the measures that we need to do. But it's those scenarios where it won't happen to me, I'll just do that quickly, I'll be fine. And that trying to do something quickly is when things can all go wrong. And I think the other point to note is that there are just more risks associated with our job. Big equipment, heavy machinery, livestock, soul working, you know, there's a lot of things which feed into our job, which make it risky.
So the cost of being safe is one thing, but it shouldn't mean we don't prioritise being safe. There are other things in play here, according to Stephanie Barclay from Yellow Wellies.
It could be simply complacency. I've done this every day. It's never happened to me. You know, I know what I'm doing. I'm not going to bother with risk assessments. I can't be bothered with that paperwork. All of that kind of attitude, rushing, tiredness will contribute to that. If you're not taking that 1 second to think about what could go wrong and put yourself in a position where you can make something right and make it safer for yourself, that 1 minute of time, but that's you thinking about all the other things that you have to do on the farm that day.
And in fact, in 2023, the NFU ran a safety campaign called Take Five to Stay Alive. Basically, take a 5-minute pause to consider safety precautions before doing any job. But farmers are often working under time pressure, especially at busy times of year, according to Lincolnshire farmer Charles Anion.
You know, I'll be on the loader, I'll have tracts and trailers coming into the yard, you know, relentlessly. Then I'll have lorries in at the same time. I'll have 3 or 4 lined up waiting to leave the yard. And you're really struggling to keep on top of it and you're rushing. And I can always pinpoint that time when loads are coming in and loads that are going out. And when you are rushing is the time that problems are going to occur. And, you know, I've had to tell lorry drivers before, you've got to, you know, you're going to have to bear with me here because we got to keep it safe. You're trying to do everything at 100 miles an hour and that's when problems can occur.
So complacency, tiredness, rushing, all contribute to farm accidents. So too does mental health. The Farm Safety Foundation, Yellow Wellies, has done work on this.
And what we found was that people that had lower levels of mental wellbeing score were more likely to take risks. They were less likely to think of the consequences. They were also less likely to think that it was their personal responsibility to farm safely. And they were less likely to wear PPE, safety goggles and all that, and use the right equipment. There was evidence of a clear link between farm safety and levels of mental wellbeing. If you're not in the right headspace when you get behind the wheel of a tractor to do your job, you're more likely to lose concentration, you're more likely to be thinking about something completely different, and you're more likely to be putting yourself in a risky position where you're not fully committed to the job and thinking about the risks that there could be in the job in an industry with the poorest safety record of any occupation in the UK.
So, what should we be doing to minimise risk and make farming safer? Let's start with Stuart Roberts and Becca Wilson, and then Charles Anion.
We have got to start to look at farmers and farms as we look at every other workplace. You can't de-risk a farm. The farm cannot be a 100% safe environment, nor can a printing factory or a food factory or crossing the road. You cannot eliminate risk. But what we do know is there's lots of things we can do that can minimise risks.
I think we should probably look more at some free and affordable solutions. So, for example, how many farmers have what three words on their phone? I certainly do. So if I was on my own and had an accident, the emergency services would hopefully be able to find me more quickly. So I think there's some solutions which we can do as farmers, which are free or affordable. And that it's a no-brainer to be doing some of them.
What we also don't do is we never, ever call each other out on these things. So if I see someone without a helmet on a quad bike, I never used to say anything because I was embarrassed to point it out. If I saw someone in a bucket with a chainsaw 30 feet off the ground, I never said anything. Now, there's an element of that's probably because historically I used to do that and I'm almost embarrassed about myself. But there's also an element of these are our friends and our peers and our colleagues, and we don't want to tell them they're doing the wrong thing. But actually, the worst thing we can do is not point it out. And we need to absolutely normalise it, whether we're farmers, whether we are contractors who come on to farm, whether we are visitors to farm, whoever you are, if you see something that doesn't look safe, I want you to tell me. I want you to come and tell me, tell that farmer, tell whoever it is, because that's the only way we will improve what are horrendous statistics that have not changed for decades.
100%. And maybe I'm lucky, I feel like I can call things out with my mum and dad, for example, but I will sometimes say, I refuse to do that. I'm not doing that because I don't think that's quite right. And I just won't do the job. Now, some people will say, oh gosh, well, I can't believe she's that rude, she's that insolent, you know, she's going against what she's being told or whatever, or what she should be doing. But I simply won't do it. And I think as the next generation coming through, we're in a position where we probably do need to be a bit brave. And it's not always easy to stand up to people. Sometimes you can feel very conscious, whether it's a family business or not, that you're upsetting the apple cart, to use that phrase. But actually, it would upset things more if somebody crashed into the back of you because your trailer didn't have lights on. So I think we can call it out more, and there's lots more resources where you can go in, you know, to your employer or if it's family, and know your facts. So and charity like Yellow Wellies, for example, have fantastic resources on some of the things that we should be doing, whether that's trailer safety or working at heights. There's resources where we can back things up. It's not us just being difficult.
And I always make sure I have a look occasionally at the Health and Safety Executive accident reports. And you just read, you read them, and 99 times out of 100, you think, blimey, that really was avoidable. With a bit of education, that would have been avoidable. So we always, you know, on the farm, any of the more dangerous jobs, chainsawing, etc., I always make sure full PPE is worn. I always make sure there is more than one of us there, just in case there is a problem. Luckily, there never has been. Qualifications are kept up to date. And, yeah, education in that respect is key.
And a good source of education is Yellow Wellies. Here's Stephanie Barclay.
We're a small charity and we have four key work streams. First one is education. So we're out delivering farm safety and mental wellbeing training at agricultural colleges, land-based colleges and universities right throughout the UK, and also through the Young Farmers Club network, which is a really important avenue for us. We have engagement, which is basically making friends. So we work with farm safety partnerships, the unions, the young farmers clubs, and anybody else that's interested in the issues of poor mental health and risk taking in the industry. We have communications, because there's no point in just raising awareness. You've got to sort of get that information out there. So we have two big campaigns in a year, Farm Safety Week and Mind Your Head. We have advice pages on the website, free of charge for anybody. We've got checklists on the website. We have books. So for example, if you're the parents of a young child, we have a quick, you know, guide for parents about keeping the children safe on farm. Temporary workers that are there, just there for the summer, you know, that you may not have time to do a full safety course, the information is there for them. And we're launching in the next couple of weeks a free online tool where a farmer can build his own health and safety policy. Basically, it's tailored to their business. It takes 20 minutes, but it's tailored to them. They go through all the elements of it. It comes together as a PDF that's tailored to that business. It's been approved by the Health and Safety Executive and Red Tractor, and it's free. So health and safety does not cost the earth, but it could cost your life if you don't do it properly.
Stephanie Barclay from the Farm Safety Foundation. So that was quite a traumatic programme, Adam, but from your perspective, what do you think are the biggest risks on a farm?
They are endless. And I think, you know, we need to really consider ourselves as a dangerous environment and be careful and professional about the way we deal with it. On this farm, we're working with livestock. We've got four or five bulls on the farm that could turn on you at any time, even though we assume they won't. And we've got big bits of machinery. Falling from heights is a classic one, by not having the right equipment to do things at heights. And we've actually moved away from quad bikes now. We have buggies that are a sort of side-by-side vehicle, so you can fit two people in them. But still, I see all the time on farms people riding quad bikes with no helmets, and we know how dangerous that can be.
Do you think that in some cases farmers are a bit blasé? Oh, it'll only take a few minutes, it won't happen, I'll just crack on with it?
I think it's absolutely classic. Yes, I think we're all guilty of that. We're in a hurry, we want to get on, we don't feel like we've got the time, or that maybe we don't need to put on that protective clothing when we're using a chainsaw or a grinder or riding a quad bike. But if I think about the quad bike helmet situation, without banging on too much about that, you know, it used to be in my youth that we didn't wear a seatbelt in a car. Everybody wears a seatbelt in a car now, in the front and the back. It used to be that you would never wear a helmet when you're riding your bicycle. Now, everybody puts on a helmet when they ride a bicycle. So when you get on a quad bike that can do 35 miles an hour across rough terrain, put on a helmet. And it's because
we don't think we need to because we think we're big and tough and can manage without it, and we're a bit blasé.
And two of the reasons mentioned during that piece were lack of time and lack of money. But they're kind of excuses, aren't they?
Completely they are, yes. I mean, I think, you know, the lack of money, think of the financial impact when you have an accident. I mean, James Bannister's story was harrowing, and that has had a huge physical and emotional effect on him, his family, the people around him. But the impact on his business and what that's done to him financially will be immense too. So because you're saying you can't afford it, you can't afford not to often. I think we all need to become much more professional and think about these things far more. Easy for me to say, I know. But a point really well made in the interviews was we need to call each other out. We need to be big enough and strong enough to say, no, that's not right. Whether it's your boss or your colleague or someone visiting the farm, we need to look out for each other. Because if you don't, then almost you need to be held responsible too.
Thank you, Adam. I'm Dominic Arkwright. That's all for now.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Keeping on Track. I hope you found things in it that were helpful for you or someone you know. If you've been affected by anything you've heard today or in any other programme, you can find more information about organisations which can provide help and support by going to teamdoctor.org/farmers. Until the next time, keep on track.